All right, this meeting is back in action. Next up is our annual forest practices monitoring update, and Josh Bernard will start that off. Josh, go right ahead.
Good morning again, Chair Kelly, members of the board, State Forester Hirsch. My name is Josh Bernard, and I'm the Interim Division Chief for the Private Forest Division. This information-only agenda item covers the monitoring's work since our last update to you in September 2020, the special focus on an analysis by Mount Hood Environmental regarding our implementation monitoring program. And just take a pause here for the slides to come up. All right, go ahead, hit next slide, please. For today, we'll hear a little bit about the monitoring unit, a summary of the unit's work over the last year. Then Mount Hood Environmental will present their analysis of critiques with our previous work and their recommendations for how to improve this monitoring going forward. Monitoring unit staff will follow up with our response plan to the recommendations, along with thoughts from Mount Hood Environmental. We will pause for questions after each of those segments. I'll now hand the presentation over to Adam Coble to discuss the monitoring unit. Next slide, please.
Thanks, Josh. Chair Kelly, members of the board, State Forester Hirsch. I'm Adam Coble, Forest Health and Monitoring Manager in the Private Forest Division. So before we have Mount Hood Environmental present today, I briefly wanted to discuss what monitoring does and other projects that we currently have in the works. So we conduct monitoring to meet expectations in statute, rule, and policy, and to meet agency best practice to close the loop in the adaptive management plan do check cycle. These expectations emphasize the collaborative approach, continuous learning, adaptation to new science, and a particular focus on FPA rules concerning riparian areas, landslides, and public safety, and pesticides. Next slide. To meet these expectations, the monitoring unit has developed and operated under monitoring strategies since 1994, when monitoring first started at ODF. The fifth and latest version of the private forest monitoring strategy was approved by the board in November of 2016. The strategy provides a prioritized list of implementation and effectiveness monitoring topics. As a reminder, implementation monitoring asks the question, are forestry laws properly applied? Whereas effectiveness monitoring asks the question, do the forestry laws protect natural resources as expected? The monitoring unit has maintained a focus on high and medium priority monitoring topics with its completed, ongoing, and new work. Next slide. I wanted to start out with work that doesn't necessarily fall into effectiveness or implementation monitoring, but fits in well with our monitoring priorities. So for the past 2 years, we have been meeting with the Department of Environmental Quality and updating our Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU. Between the two agencies, we focused our work on developing a mutual understanding of our respective policies and authorities with input from the Oregon Department of Justice and to align the two agencies' water quality responsibilities and processes. We've also worked together towards the board's previously scheduled July 2020 sufficiency decision on stream temperature in the Siskiyou, with the Department of Environmental Quality providing helpful input on the Siskiyou report. The Memorandum of Understanding was sent out for public comment, and we're currently working on responses to those comments. The revisions are nearly completed, and we're working on finalizing the MOU. On November 17th, there will be a joint Board of Forestry Environmental Quality Commission meeting to present the MOU for water quality protections. Next slide. With our effectiveness monitoring, the main project is the Western Oregon Streamside Protections Review, and there are three main components to this project. First, we have completed the field study and data analysis portion, which is included in ODF Technical Report number 21. This report focuses on a detailed analysis of the ripstream vegetation data for sites on private land. Some data metrics include stand characteristics of riparian forests, understory vegetation, downwood and large wooded streams. The second component is literature review that covers topics such as desired feature conditions of riparian forests and large wood. Regarding our literature review, relevant studies in riparian forests typically include data collection at one point in time. So there's are limitations to the inferences about riparian stand development. So that's where the third component comes in, the modeling analysis. That'll be helpful. It will allow us to project and understand changes in riparian stand conditions over time. Next slide. For our implementation monitoring, we're working on a reforestation pilot study that will evaluate landowner compliance with reforestation rules on timeliness of planting, stocking levels, and suitability of species. We have incorporated recommendations into the pilot study from Mount Hood Environmental. And we currently have an external review team. We've presented the pilot study and provided a protocol on that study. We are starting and have started field data collection, and just want to acknowledge John Hawksworth and Paul Clements and their work in setting up that study and collecting field data. With respect to our last implementation study, we received feedback on our previous work and some concerns about the implementation study. So Mount Hood, we contracted out Mount Hood Environmental that evaluated that feedback. They developed solutions to address specific critiques and also provided a recommendation for moving forward with current and future implementation studies. So before I hand it over to Mount Hood Environmental, I thought I'd do a few introductions. So joining us today, we have Tara Blackman, senior biologist at Mount Hood Environmental, Mark Rose, a statistician at Mount Hood Environmental, Mark Tepley, senior forestry scientist at Mark Tepley Consulting, and Kevin Cedar, quantitative silviculturist at Woodland Creek Consulting. So Tara and Mark will be presenting today for Mount Hood Environmental, and so now I'll hand it over to Tara.
Thanks, Adam. Good morning, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, and members of the board. My name is Tara Blackman. I'm a biologist at Mount Hood Environmental, and I'm here today with several colleagues, Kevin Cedar, Mark Tepley, and Mark Rose, to discuss the Forest Practices Act implementation study. I'm going to start today by going over the background and purpose of compliance monitoring and why we're here today. And then I'm going to pass the baton to Mark Rose, who will walk through our assessment of the implementation study and then talk about our recommendations for future monitoring. Next slide, please. Forestry laws in Oregon are administered through the Forest Practices Act, which sets the specific rules for forest practices. Compliance monitoring is designed to provide information about compliance with Oregon's forestry laws. So why do we monitor? Well, there are many more timber harvests occurring than can be intensively monitored by state stewardship foresters. So instead, the Department of Forestry monitors a reasonable number of harvest operations to provide generalizable data. And this method of subsampling harvest operations is a standard statistical tool, and it allows you to make inferences about the unsurveyed harvest operations. In turn, we were supposed to be on the next slide. There we go. So we're on that third bullet. So in turn, that data helps us identify which rules are in low compliance. And again, rules are used to administer the forestry laws. And by identifying rules that are in low compliance, ODF can focus outreach and education, thereby improving compliance with those rules. Lastly, I want to make an important distinction about what monitoring is not intended to do, and that is it is not intended to provide legal determinations of compliance or non-compliance. So In Oregon, compliance is not used for enforcement. Next slide, please. So to put this in a little bit more context, I want to acknowledge that forest regulations or best management practices exist in almost every U.S. state. Some states address legislative forest practice laws, meaning they're regulatory, and this is the case for Oregon, while others consider voluntary adherence to best management practices, meaning they're non-regulatory. And compliance monitoring programs across states are variable, and that is largely attributed to differences in each program's focus. And these differences will shape the study design, including which best management practices are assessed and which site selection and analytical approaches are used. Lastly, I want to highlight that some of the issues that we're going to delve into today are not unique to Oregon. And specifically, compliance monitoring is often limited by landowner participation or access to private property. And this is simply just part of the landscape when you're working on private property. And as we're going to hear about shortly, this can affect the data collection and the analysis. Next slide, please. So now we know what compliance monitoring is. I'm going to get into the specifics of Oregon's program, which monitors compliance through what is now called the Implementation Monitoring Study. And this study took place between 2013 and 2017, and the intent was to provide generalizable results that would inform agencies, stakeholders, and the public about compliance with forestry laws. So ODF's program had six specific goals. I want to quickly cover each of them because this is the lens from which we evaluated their program. So the first is to provide data for annual reporting to the Oregon legislature. Two, to verify implementation of forest practices on private property for potential use in third-party certification systems. We're not going to talk about this one at all today, but I encourage you to look at our report for more information. Third, to provide an informed and systematic basis for targeted training efforts. Fourth, to improve the public's trust in ODF and those it regulates. Fifth, to provide data to the Board of Forestry. And sixth, to provide for an efficient use of state resources. These six goals are pretty dense, and I'm not going to unpack all the details today. However, I do want to keep in mind that some of these goals are not necessarily targeted at providing rigorous data, while others are. Next slide, please. The implementation study intended to address those six goals. The study reported data on rule level compliance and also unit level compliance, which is the level of compliance for individual harvest operations. However, after the release of the 2017 report, several critiques were received by experts. And these critiques were summarized by Groom Analytics. That's the 2020 document I have cited here. And these critiques identified some potentially problematic issues related to the study design analysis and the reporting of those results. So in response to those critiques, ODF contracted our team to conduct an independent review of the implementation study and assess the validity of those critiques. Additionally, we were asked to provide some recommendations to improve the program. And now I'm going to turn it over to Mark Rose, and he's going to be talking about some of the elements of the program that may have fallen short and how that can be improved in the future.
Thank you, Tara. Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, and members of the board. I'm Mark Rose, the statistician from Output Environmental. Next slide, please. I'd like to apologize for the sides of those slides getting cut off, given the virtual nature and everything. I'm sure the PDFs will have the entire slides. So to provide some context for the conclusions of our review, I am going to briefly cover the design of the implementation study using the on-screen diagram. First, harvest units were drawn from a database of harvest notifications submitted by landowners. These notifications only state an intent to conduct harvest on private land. So the harvest may or may not have been completed. Harvest units were drawn based upon their region and their landowner type, with landowner types ranging from small private non-industrial landowners to larger privately owned industrial forest lands. Once the sample of possible harvest units was drawn, landowners were contacted and asked to participate in the study. Participation in the study was voluntary. Some landowners simply did not respond to contact, and some others responded but refused access onto their land. Where landowners permitted access, harvest units were surveyed for compliance with a subset of forestry rules. These surveys provided the data used to calculate and report compliance. Next slide, please. In our review of critiques submitted to ODF, which were summarized in the Groom 2020 document, we identified four primary concerns. I will use this diagram to illustrate where three of these occurred during the study process. First, the actual number of completed harvests was unknown. The harvest notification database that units were drawn from only stated an intent to harvest, not that it was completed. Why does this matter? Not estimating the total number of completed harvests impeded the ability of the study to draw a random sample. So we cannot know if the results are representative of timber harvest in Oregon. Next slide, please. The second primary concern was non-response, which occurred at two different points during the sample selection process. First, ODF attempted to contact landowners. Some landowners did not respond. Second, after the initial contact, landowners were asked to provide land access for surveying. Some landowners refused. Why does this matter? So if there was any difference in compliance with forestry rules between the harvests that were surveyed and those that of either of those two types of non-respondents, then the results would be biased. Therefore, non-response introduced potential bias into the results. It is important to note that non-response is not unique to the implementation study. It can occur in any study with voluntary participation, especially in surveys or medical studies, which can have much higher rates of non-response than were observed here. Next slide, please. Third, we have autocorrelation and collinearity. These relate to the field survey methods that were used in harvest units and how these data were summarized. Autocorrelation occurs when two measures of the same thing are related with one another. For example, let's say I'm standing in a neighborhood in front of a $2 million house. Now, do we expect that the value of the house next door is more likely to be closer to $400,000 or $2 million? $2 million, right? The value of the two houses next to each other are related. They're not independent from one another. Collinearity is similar. Using the same house example, do we expect that the owner of a $2 million house drives a nice car or an old beater? Probably a nice car, right? That's collinearity, where two different things, such as house and car value, are related. These issues were not addressed in the study design of the implementation study and introduced the potential for bias. Next slide, please. Next, I'm going to cover the fourth primary concern and mention some others while explaining how we categorize these critiques. The fourth primary concern had to do with the methods used to calculate compliance. In short, we found that the methods used for compliance calculation were inappropriate for the reported results that included multiple forestry rules or that were across multiple regions or landowner types. We found that these four concerns formed scientifically defensible arguments that impacted the results. In addition, there were two critiques that formed scientifically defensible arguments, but their impact on results was unknown. These related to the QA, QC, so quality control process for survey data, as well as not reporting the potential error in results. Finally, there were a few critiques that were the result of miscommunication or omissions in the reports, which had no impact or were irrelevant. In general, these critiques were related to how results were reported or they disagreed with the intent of the study. Next slide, please. So despite these issues limiting the statistical reliability of the implementation study, it is important to consider the study in context of its intent to fulfill those six agency goals. While some of these goals may require statistically reliable results, others do not. So we evaluated the utility of the implementation study to meet these goals using a table of criteria to meet the goals at a basic and high level, which was provided by ODF. We found that three goals were met at a basic degree, despite the limited scope of inference and bias. So that's goal number one, providing data to the legislature. Goal number three, forming a systematic basis for training and education. And five, providing data to the Board of Forestry. It is important to note that we don't know if potential bias influenced decision-making and that anecdotal findings such as photo documentation has been useful for training purposes. Next slide, please. As part of our review, we evaluated the utility of re-examining existing implementation study data. And we found that amending results through an analysis of the 2013 through 2017 data is not recommended because it could not expand the scope of inference. Even after conducting another analysis, the data would still not be generalizable across all harvests in Oregon. It could not determine if bias influenced the results, and it could not produce reliable confidence intervals. The true amount of error and corresponding confidence in those results could not be quantified. However, existing data can inform future monitoring by accounting for landowner non-response and harvest completion during that sample draw process and estimating the population with prior harvest completion rates. This would increase the efficiency of a future implementation study. Next slide, please. As part of our review, we developed recommendations for a future implementation study. All recommendations were designed to fit within and improve upon the existing study plan infrastructure, including the current research budget. Recommendations were constructed with the assumption that landowner participation is voluntary. That means that non-response will still occur and needs to be addressed during the study design and analysis. Also, harvest completion will continue to be unknown during the sample selection process. The foci of our recommendations were to 1, address those agency goals, 2, account for non-response, 3, reduce the potential for error and bias, and 4, increase program efficiency. Next slide, please. In our recommendations, we developed a set of 8 process changes that form the foundation for a study design that addresses all relevant critiques and produces statistically reliable results. I'm just going to go over those 3 bolded points, which directly address those primary concerns from earlier. So, number 3, quantifying the population of harvest units. The population could be estimated using harvest completion rates from the prior study. Number 4, accounting for non-response bias. We recommended conducting extra effort to contact and gain land access from landowners, which could then be used to learn if there's any difference in compliance between respondents and the initial non-respondents. This would be combined with a sensitivity analysis to quantify the potential influence of non-response. And number 7, applying within unit stratifications for roads and streams to mitigate for autocorrelation and to increase sampling efficiency. This would reduce the overall effort required to survey each harvest unit. These 8 process changes provide a solid conceptual foundation for any compliance monitoring study design. So now let's get into our recommended approach. Next slide, please. We developed a range of approaches and recommended an approach that produces estimates of rule level compliance that can be reported by ownership type, which are those small, medium, or larger private landowners. So compliance can be reported specific to those large or small private lands. The recommended approach can meet all agency goals to a moderate to high degree and is within the current resource budget. The approach is flexible. It can accommodate changes to the focus of the study, for example, in terms of which forestry rules are being examined. It also leverages prior implementation study to gain additional efficiency. Next slide, please. Oh, those arrows dropped out. So let's zoom back out to the purpose of our review. The implementation study set out to fulfill ODF agency goals, which would provide insight to better protect, manage, and promote stewardship of Oregon's forests. Critiques of this study were submitted by members of the Board of Forestry and others, which were summarized in that GROOM 2020 document. This motivated our review, which found that issues limited the utility of results and also provided recommendations to address these critiques, better fulfill agency goals, and produce statistically rigorous results. This concludes our portion of the review. Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, and members of the board, we will pause for any questions you may have. Afterwards, I'm going to pass the baton to Terry Frew at ODF, who will cover the response plan that they developed. Thank you.
Jim, this is Brenda McComb. Is it okay if I ask a question? Well, yeah. I will.
Sorry, I was muted, had myself muted.
Brenda McComb, for the record, first of all, thank you for the presentation. This was excellent. My question is not so much to the presenter as it is to the board and the acting state forester. Given that reports were given to the state legislature in the past regarding compliance rates that we now know were not statistically reliable, should there be a follow-up with the legislature regarding those reports?
Nancy Kirschner, acting state forester. Brenda, I will be honest, I haven't had that discussion back with staff here. It seems a good principal intent to follow up anywhere, likely, if there's some communications that we can make on this. I think specifically also with our legislative fiscal office.
Great. Carla, you also have a question or comment?
Just an observation. It's not clear to me what the incentive is for the landowner to participate. If we only document what they did wrong or non-compliance, I would expect a low participation rate, which is what we have. So I think we need to think harder on what would motivate that landowner to a higher participation rate. That's just my general comment.
Carla, you know, I know we're just all trying to digest what is in the Forest Accord, but much right. of it becomes moot because they agreed that the state will have a legal right in that. So it's just up to the legislature to now pass that legislation. So much of what we're dealing with here will be resolved because of that significant change that's been agreed to by the property owners and timber companies. So I think, you know, I mean, I think this has been a really useful and good report, even though the law's going to change significantly soon, because what we as board members who've been on the board for a while had been complaining about was that, yes, we were meeting the law and that we were putting out data, but it was pretty obvious that the data was very likely highly flawed. So anyhow, it'll be interesting here next to hear from the ODF folks, but this whole landscape is changing very significantly in the near future.
Fair enough.
Chandra, you have a question, followed by Joe.
Chandra Ferrari, for the record. I just wanted to chime in that I had also asked the question that Brenda presented to staff in terms of whether or not the previous results that were communicated in various forums need to have some sort of cover letter or caveat or something now that has a little bit explanation. And we had a little bit of dialogue about that. So I expect that the staff would be able to opine on that or would hope they would in the next section.
Okay. Joe?
Yeah, Chair Carroll, this is Joe Justice for the record. To answer maybe Carla, you know, question what, why would a landowner be interested in this? I guess speaking from as an industrial representing industrial landowner, we're very interested in it for the confidence in that the rules are working and that we can show often, you know, we have third party certification that we, you know, rely on forest practice compliance to, you know, ensure that kind of third party certification. So that's one reason. I guess to Brenda's comment regarding, you know, I guess there's some amendment to the legislature. I think the results still informed, maybe not as well as, you know, as they should, but they still informed. And so that's not data that is should be completely lost as far as compliance. You know, I also want to point out the department's done an excellent job through education with this kind of information. So if you're anybody working in the woods, working with stewardship foresters daily, this kind of information really inform, you know, stewardship foresters are using this kind of information to educate operators and make sure that we're always improving what we're doing across the landscape. I think we have to make sure that that isn't lost on one of the primary missions of this is to help educate, inform operators to where maybe we're need more attention, more education is happening. So those are, I guess, just my comments.
Great. Carla, you still have your hand up. Is that
So I appreciate that, Joe. Thank you. I didn't see in this report where by size, if we're out of compliance. And is the compliance rate with larger owners, because I really appreciate what you're saying there, Joe, but is the larger compliance attributed to larger entities? Do we have a higher non-compliance rate with smaller operators? And if that's in there, I apologize, but I didn't see it.
I mean, I think you have a higher participation rate with industrial landowners. You know, I think that's true. I think it's more challenging, I think, correct if I'm wrong. I think with the smaller non-industrial landowners have a lower participation rate. And so I think the question becomes, I mean, which is a fair question. Have we biased the results? I mean, when you begin to present that all together, that's a fair, absolutely fair. I think we don't necessarily know.
I think,
and that's why we're trying to improve through the process and the statistics.
Yeah, and if you noted in one of the recommendations is that report, they report by landowner group, you know, so in the future, which seems like a really good idea as that goes forward. And Brenda, you have your hand up. Okay.
Yep, got it. Brenda McComb for the record, just to be clear, we don't know what the compliance rates are from previously collected data, but the work that's been done here should provide us with much more reliable estimates with confidence intervals around them for the future.
Okay. With that, then, turn that back over to staff and to Josh.
Great. Thanks, Jim. And maybe just while we're on that subject, the piece referenced there around future communications around the past results, and maybe just make a clear distinction there. So I think, and we'll talk about this a little bit in terms of the recommendation and then the question on communications. So I think there are formal processes going forward where now that we have this information, we can include that. When I think about that, like our key performance measures, when we resubmit information, you know, we can include the outcomes of this report as part of that notation around those results per what Nancy noted in terms of appropriate communications going forward. I think the part is, you know, going back and doing the reanalysis part probably won't produce any better results or something that we could resubmit. So it's more of a communication and notation piece going forward in those appropriate communication channels. So just wanted to touch on that and bring closure to that here if I could.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, back to staff.
Okay, thank you, Josh. If we can advance to the next slide, please.
Thanks, Tara, Mark, and Kevin for your fine presentation. Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, members of the board, I'm Terry Free, monitoring coordinator with the monitoring unit. We appreciate the good analyses and set of recommendations from the folks at Mount Hood Environmental. They examined their work and we will be implementing all 8 of their recommendations, following closely the option they laid out in their presentation, which is option number 2 in their report. We incorporated their recommendations in the previously mentioned reforestation pilot study and excited to test them out. Going forward, for all full projects, we will have third-party review of our methods to ensure that they are both high quality and implementing the recommendations from Mount Hood Environmental. Next slide, please. Here we outline ODF's implementation of the recommendations. For explicitly defining all sampling elements, fortunately, most of these are pretty easily described, as was done in the Mount Hood Environmental Report, except for target population, which is described below. Sampling will be performed based on number of notified units rather than acreage included in the notifications. We define research questions that address agency goals and are amenable to statistical analysis. Regarding quantifying the target population, for which we don't have exact numbers a priori, we will use their 2 suggestions. The first of which evaluates results from 2013 through 2017. For example, the number of units that notified for harvest that actually did harvest, broken out by landowner type, and then reevaluate after each year's effort to keep improving this quantification. Secondly, where possible, we will use readily available remote sensing to assess site suitability. For example, these data are good for determining whether or not a clear cut occurred, but appear to be insufficient for determining if a thinning cut occurred. And for this last element, for accounting for bias from each of non-response or refusal of access, we'll systematically apply extra effort to get landowner permission. Additionally, for some rules such as road widths, we explore using remotely sensed data and comparing with ground truth data for sites that we have permission to access, while keeping an eye on the cost, because these data can be expensive. And then using the results of these 2 efforts, we will model to see if there are differences in compliance between those who granted access, those who initially did not grant us access at first but later did, and those who did not respond or outright refused access. And finally, depending on the outcomes of these first 3 efforts, we'll conduct a sensitivity analysis, place some bounds on the impact of non-response and refusal. Note that currently, landowner access to collect data remains voluntary, so we're curious to see test out Mount Hood Environmental solutions. And as Chair Kelly mentioned, this question appears to be resolved, or at least quite well addressed, in the Private Forest Accord. Next slide, please. All personnel who collect field data will undergo rigorous training on field methods. ODF will also strengthen our QAQC quality assurance and quality control protocols for these field methods and obtain third-party review of both the training and the QAQC methods. Forest practices rules limit clear cuts to 120 acres, so this recommendation mostly applies to large thinning operations, with a smaller component of salvage operations and other operations, but planned for alternate practice. We'll include this solution where feasible, the solution of subsampling on larger harvests. However, the reforestation pilot study we're currently doing focuses on clear cuts, which is under that 120 acre limit. So this particular recommendation is not germane for the pilot study. Number 7, we'll apply stratification within a unit and subsample for linear features. For example, we'll place road segments in bins by slope and presence or absence of stream crossing, then subsample each of these bins, monitor their respective compliance, but assess compliance for the entire bin and not by each sample point. And then finally, we will use the 2013 through 2017 data to inform future sample size, particularly when we develop projects that examine rules assessed with those data. We will do a power analysis to better understand the statistical power of a range of sample sizes that will improve assessment of compliance. We will assess necessary sample size using binomial approaches. And now we'll turn it over to Mount Hood Environmental to wrap up the presentation. Next slide, please.
Thank you, Terry. Terry Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, and members of the board. This is Mark Rose from Mount Hood Environmental, returning to provide one last statement. Mount Hood Environmental reviewed ODF's response plan and found that it incorporates all of our recommendation. If followed, it can produce an implementation study that addresses all relevant critiques and provides statistically rigorous results with a known level of reliability. This means we can know exactly how confident we are in the reported levels of compliance with forestry rules. This concludes our presentation. Thank you for your time, and we are available to answer any questions.
Brenda, you have your hand up?
Yes, thank you, Jim. Brenda McComb for the record. A question for Terry. What you've proposed looks great. Thank you for that. The stratification piece, though, still leaves me a little bit unclear. The consultants indicated that stratification should be done to ensure that you're minimizing any instances of autocorrelation. So will you be assessing how the stratification is addressing that autocorrelation before you begin sampling?
I would say definitely in general. For this particular reforestation pilot, it's not a germane question because we're assessing whether or not the entire harvest unit followed the reforestation, three particular reforestation rules. So for example, we have many subsamples within a unit to answer the question whether or not the entire unit was reforested to per the standards.
Got it.
But going forward, you know, for things like roads or streams, we will be following the recommendations from Mount Hood Environmental.
Great, thank you. So the for the reforestation monitoring, the harvest unit is the independent sample, and the points you put in will be subsamples of that unit. Thank you.
Exactly.
Yep. Thank you.
Other comments, questions from board members? I'm hearing none, and we're a little ahead of schedule. Great presentation, really useful. It's really wonderful to see movement in this area and with what the legislature has done. I expect to see a future where our monitoring will be really significantly better than it's been in the past, and look forward to that day.